All right, the Andy Finn Show is back. And Mike, on this date in 1941, the Philadelphia Phillies, remember we were talking about the Phillies fanatics? We're talking about Terrell Owen? Or Terrell Owen, he is, isn't he? I keep getting those confused. And on this date in 1941, the Philadelphia Phillies committed 8 errors in 1 baseball game. It's a useless fact, but I thought that was weird and fascinating. And in 1920, the 19th Amendment was ratified by the final state that needed to ratify it, and women got the right to vote in this country.
That is your right.
Yes, well. But isn't it amazing that women didn't get the right to vote until 1920? I'm always fascinated by that.
And then we made the mistake of letting them drive. But we'll save that for another show.
Letting them drive trucks in the military. Which brings us to FX. And over there, except I got one more thing I want to talk about. I said I was going to talk about this Ohio couple. So we're going to get to Cindy Sheehan after we talk about FX's TV show over there. But one more piece before we get to that was in the news today. And this is out of Ohio, out of Cleveland. A Lance Corporal by the name of Edward Schroeder II died 2 weeks ago in a roadside explosion. He was one of the 16 Ohio-based Marines that were killed in Iraq there in that spate of killing that Ohio lost so many people. And his parents, Paul Schroeder and his wife Rosemary, are from Cleveland. And they basically did a press conference yesterday in which they said, basically, you either have to fight this war the right way or get out. So they're urging that the president escalate and take enough troops in there to do the job right or start pulling out. But
I don't know that we have the troops to send.
And I think that's true. Plus, it would send the wrong signal. That's the dilemma is we should have done it 2 years ago.
Right? Now, we could escalate in the way that we fight the war. We could take a more aggressive stance and have more offensive-type operations. But I think that, too, would send the wrong message.
Well, I leave that stuff to the generals. But we aren't securing the borders. Right? We got two main problems for which I think we need more troops. One is we're not securing the borders. So the border with Syria, the border with Iran, there are fighters and people going back and forth, and we can't control it. The second thing is we clear out a town, the Marines go in, clear out of town, we lose a few good men, and as soon as we move on, the insurgents go right back in. Mm-hmm. We can't hold those towns once we secure them. And so it all suggests more troops are needed. Now, the problem is at this point, A, the Bush administration is never going to send more troops. They continue to say the generals are making this call, and they say they have enough, which, of course, I've said on this show many times is crap. But at this point, it does send the wrong signal to Iraqis, and frankly, to the insurgents that are saying, we want you out, and it sends the wrong signals to Muslims across the world if we start adding to the number of troops we have. So it's a tough position. We should have gone in with big strength in the beginning, and I think the situation would be different, although I think it would always have been a long, tough slog, as Rummy termed it. But anyway, this couple said that, you know, escalator, get out. And then he went on to say that his son and other Marines are being misused if you're just trying to make them a stabilizing force in Iraq because there's nothing to stabilize. And he said, quote, our comments are not just those of grieving parents. They are based on anger, Mr. President, not grief. Anger is an honest emotion when someone's family has been violated. And so he's basically saying, up the ante or get out, but don't keep goofing, you know, don't keep the status quo. I don't want to say it. Don't keep doing something that isn't working. So that's this Ohio couple. So what's interesting is this is all adding, it seems to me, to the pressure and, frankly, to the poll numbers that continue to drop for support with the war. So eventually the political pressure will get to be too much, and as independent as this president likes to think he is, the pressure will come from Republicans as we draw nearer to the election next year, and we'll be getting out. Hopefully enough Iraqis will be trained that they'll be able to maintain their own country. Let me get off the bad news for a minute, and before we get to Cindy Sheehan, let's talk about Over There. So, Mike, week number four on this new TV show on FX was last night at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. What did you think? Describe for us a little bit the episode, and then what you thought of it.
This particular platoon was selected by the base commander to go to a town and observe the town, because through the town runs a road and a bridge where these trucks were waiting to pass, but they couldn't because someone in the town was spotting for this mortar team, and they were making traveling on that road very dangerous. So the generals, basically, it was kind of funny, actually, the way they got into the whole mission scenario, because the general said, look, you know, I've got 11,000 men here in this base camp, and I only have a few slit latrines, and, you know, a few miles away past this town where these mortar emplacements are, I've got a bunch of trucks with American-made toilets. He's like, I want my toilets, is basically what the general said.
Yeah, I thought that was funny that actually this whole mission was about delivering toilets.
Yeah, it was funny, too, because he said that the camp was starting to smell like Trenton, New Jersey. Andy, you've been to Trenton. Does this stink?
No, not as bad as outside Newark Airport, but I blame New York City for all of it.
Right. So, and it's kind of neat, too, because they had a, you know, I remember our friend Colonel, I think it was Ryan from the last episode, actually gave the general high marks for this particular unit. And the general basically told the sergeant, look, you know, if you don't want these crappy missions, don't be so good at them.
That's right.
So basically they were sent to this town to pick out the spotter for this mortar teams and take him out. And they went to the town, and the dilemma was that the suspected spotter, the guy who thought it was spotting for the mortar teams, looked like a regular family man. He lived in a small little hut in this little ratty village. He had a baby son. He had a wife. At one point he was outside playing soccer with his son, and the soldiers were like, look, is this guy a bona fide family man, or is he putting on this front to make it more difficult for us to kill him? I thought that was an interesting...
Yeah, they said they're showing him his child and his wife so that we have trouble killing him.
Exactly.
But in fact, they suspected he was the spotter because he seemed to always be home and around when the vehicles come through. And then they had to send guinea pigs through. So the first truck elected to go through was driven by two of our platoon, including Mrs. B, short for bitch, apparently, and the black woman. What's her name, Bo?
Oh, no, she's...
Anyway, wide load or what?
Yeah, wide load, that's it.
Whatever it is. Uh-huh. And so they're driving through, and as fast as they can, and the mortars don't get them, so they get the truck through. But it's still hard to tell if the guy's spotting for them. So that's what the whole episode is about, is this guy the spotter? And if we kill him, are we killing an innocent civilian or not? And so what I love about this show is that it shows you the uncertainty of war in a way that the newspaper can't and the news reports on TV cannot.
Well, especially this kind of war that we're fighting.
Yeah, exactly. And so they didn't know the whole show. And they got one or two guys in the platoon saying, come on, cap his butt and let's go home. You know, as long as you come out of this, we come out of this alive, we did the right thing. And other people saying, wait a minute, what if he's innocent? Mm-hmm. So they show you the moral dilemma and the different attitudes of soldiers from who cares to let's not do something that's unethical here. And so ultimately the general gives the order and they say, we're not going to make the decision. We can't be 100% sure, sir, but we think he's our man. What do you want us to do? And the general gives the order. Actually, they don't come out and say kill because they talk about this, that no, you won't get a written order. You won't even get a general to say, yes, go kill this man. What they say is, do what needs to be done, something vague like that. And they all are worried that, yeah, and if it's the wrong guy, who gets court-martialed? It isn't going to be the general. It's going to be us. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was telling because that is how it works. There is plausible deniability down the line. And also, it's nonspecific. You trust the commander in the field to do the right thing. But ultimately, the general wanted it handled, and they finally said, we're sending the trucks through, and they sent the whole convoy through, all these valuable soldiers, and a whole convoy of trucks sitting ducks on the road. If the mortars had a shot at them, they'd have got most of them, probably. And so then it became time for the sniper, the best sniper in the platoon, to take out this guy. And so you couldn't actually see him because he was behind the curtain in the window, and it was daylight. But if he was there, and they assumed he was, they knew where he'd be standing. So the sniper shoots, and he falls out the window.
One shot, one kill.
One shot, he falls out the window, and binoculars fall out the window with him, and a radio.
So that was proof enough.
So they knew he was standing at the window spotting. Yep. And then, of course, his wife comes out and sees him outside the window and is crying over his body and weeping. And you realize the human cost here. Now, he gets what he deserves because he was working with the insurgents. You know, he should keep his nose clean if he wants to live and if he wants to respect his family and care for his family. But that's the human cost of war. So I think the show's pretty well done.
Yeah, and it showed another aspect of the human cost, you know, from the soldier's family side. You know, it showed Dim's wife again and his stepson, Eddie. And it showed that she was out again all night partying him up or doing whatever. And, you know, he woke up. Mommy wasn't home. So he decides to pack his bag. And remember, he was going to go to the airport and try to book a flight to Iraq to be with his stepdad.
Right.
And the mom wound up having a miscarriage because she was pregnant and she couldn't stop the boozing. So that was pretty sad, too. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, she's not a little bit messed up, but also under a lot of stress.
Yeah.
But the kid is suffering. She has a miscarriage. So it shows the stress that families are under.
Absolutely.
Now, some of that stress is of her own making. She's having an affair and all of that. So
I couldn't remember. No, she lost the baby. Now, I'm not sure. Is she pregnant by another man?
Didn't make it clear. Assuming that they've only been gone a few weeks, which is what we see in the show itself. It's only been 4 weeks. And she was 12 weeks pregnant,
yeah.
It was his baby. On the other hand, they could have been gone 6 months and that she was pregnant with somebody else's baby. So they haven't made that clear, and it almost doesn't matter at some level. But because she's not having the baby. But it's messing up families at home as well. And we didn't see a lot of the guy that lost his leg, except that he went into the rehab to watch. He's not quite ready for rehab yet, but he went in to watch, and he's reading a book that was written by a soldier that rejoined his unit after he lost a limb. Mm-hmm. Of course, very unusual to be able to rejoin your unit after you use a limb. And his wife's against it. His wife wants him home and safe and thinks he's given enough. And, of course, he has this loyalty to his unit and this fantasy still of rejoining them. And so the other guys in rehab are all giving him a hard time saying, yeah, we've seen other people like you thinking crazy that they're going back to their unit, and basically telling him to give up that dream, that it's unrealistic, and frankly, his place is now with his wife, I guess they would say. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's over there, and a little bit uplifting, considering what we're going through in Iraq, that's the bad news we're talking about this week. You know, it's tough, because whether it's Cindy Sheehan, or it's this couple in Ohio, or it's the pessimism of the columnist that we're talking about this week, our soldiers are fighting, and so the argument you hear from the families who have soldiers over there, and you hear it more from the conservative talk show hosts and the conservative representatives in the media, say that this undermines the war effort. You know, it's all one big pot. You cannot not talk about it. So I like over there because I do find it uplifting, and I do find that it tells us what our soldiers are going through and what they're dealing with, and frankly, how heroic they are. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a mother who lost her son over there and what that means for the national debate.